Hello and welcome to episode 150 of the Good Good Golf Podcast. Rod Morrie dutifully noting the milestone of the episode number, but without getting carried away. It's actually fitting that this episode is some kind of special because this week's discussion topic is just that. The US Women's Open not too far from getting underway at Pebble Beach in California. Shortly, we'll be joined by a man on the ground at the venue known as America's Golf Course. Bagman for NG Chun, Dean Hurden, has agreed to have a chat, and we'll bring him in just a moment. However, the established pecking order demands that it is co-founder and co-host of the podcast, Adrian Logue, that gets top billing. So let's give him that, Logue. You're in a suit. What's going on?
I just thought I'd class things up here. You know, it's just raise the standard a little bit.
You familiar with the term lipstick on a pig?
Oh, wow.
Excuse me.
Ouch.
Wow.
Fair enough. No, you look delightful, mate. I was worried that you'd been to a funeral, but just some sort of business meeting. Looking forward to having the chat today. You gave us an extensive rundown on the playing from the Tips podcast about the course. Now we're going to get the first-hand stuff from Dean Hurden about it. Also in the studio here, Golf Australia Magazine digital and deputy editor Jimmy Emanuel. Jimmy, you're not wearing a suit.
No, but I think I look good too.
I think you look fine.
I'm a bit rattled. I've had an experience at the coffee shop on the way here. Logue ran after me down the street. I thought I was about to be murdered. And then I stepped in some sort of fecal matter out the front of your studio. Mm. So I'm rattled, to say the least.
There's a dog lives in the complex, and I think you've now officially met the dog.
Well, I haven't met the dog, but not face to face, so to speak.
Enough of all that nonsense. Let's go to California and to the Pebble Beach Golf Links. I think it's Pebble Beach Golf Links, isn't it?
It is, indeed.
The Pebble Beach Golf Links, where we will see the best women players in the game teeing it up this week for the US Women's Open. Dean Hurden carries the bag for NG Chun, must be said very effectively. Before we get started, Dean, how many majors in your back pocket? Remind me.
Oh, just a couple, mate. Yeah, not too many.
Eight or 11?
No, I wish it was that many. No, I don't know, mate.
What do you mean you don't?
Oh, that's when you know you've got a lot. That's when you don't know.
Flex, isn't it? Hey?
I also don't know how many majors I've got.
Humble brag.
poking along, mate. I've just made a few cuts out there, that's all.
Yes, doing.
We've got at least eight majors between the four of us.
That's exactly right. We're going okay. How is it there, mate? There must be some level of excitement. These weeks are always special, but you get the feeling from the outside that this week at Pebble Beach is another level again.
Yeah, it's special. It's the first time the women have played Pebble. So, it's really special, you know, the hype and everything. And a lot of the girls have been so excited to get here. And two, 3 days now they've been in. A lot of the girls actually turned up last week because there was a week off, and from the tour schedule. And some of them rocked up last Wednesday. And they've been there, you know, well before the event starts, so which they're allowed to do. And the USGA gave them the right to play the course if they wanted to from Wednesday to Friday. And officially, normally, in a normal week, they're only allowed to play from Saturday, Sunday onwards. But the USGA allowed them to play from Wednesday to Friday if they wanted to.
What do you reckon, Dean? Hindrance or help? That's a lot of times around the course beforehand. Is there something to be said for that, or is there a danger that you play it too much?
Yeah, exactly. I think it is. Yeah, sometimes you've got to be. It's an energy level that the girls have got to be conscious of. You know, they've got to be very aware of it. That don't suffer from burnout. You know, and you can know too much about it, of course. You know, and some of the girls, I think, are guilty of that. But especially in the Korean camp, there's like 25 Korean girls playing this week. And, you know, the Korean people, the girls love to work hard. And they just want to, you know, get out there and get familiar with the golf course as much as possible. So they're happy to get there on Wednesday and do the stuff, you know, their routine, the whole thing. But it's a golf course that you should know too. You've got to get in and get some local knowledge in there.
Yes.
And
you've been there for a while yourself. Is the same thing true of the caddy? Can you be too familiar with the golf course, or does the caddy need to know everything just so that they can pass on the important parts to the player?
Yeah, I think I've done it a couple of times, you know, where you turn up really, really early and it didn't do me any good at all. You know, by the end of the week, I'm just like, oh, okay, you know. And sometimes you lose that sharpness because you kind of get what's the word I'm looking for, probably not lazy, but just the intensity level drops because you've been around this course so many times, you know, and it's kind of overkill. The usual routine is for us to turn up on Monday, have a look at the course thoroughly. Tuesday, Wednesday, pro-am, tournament starts, you're into it. But all of a sudden, if your routine changes, things may change out there. But I've never had any success of actually, you know, doing 15 rounds around a golf course. You know, it's I think your awareness drops, I think. And, you know, you just sort of get too familiar with the place, you know. Yeah.
For a game that looks like it's about hitting a ball into a hole with a bunch of sticks, Adam Scott in particular talks about it. Almost no tournament passes where he doesn't talk about rhythm, getting into a rhythm, not just of the golf, but of the week itself. It's kind of what you've outlaid there, isn't it, Dean? You kind of want to be in rhythm. You play golf for a living. There's a cycle to it, isn't there? There's a rhythm. There's a and you mess with that.
A tour routine.
Yeah.
A tour routine. Yeah. And as I said to you before, you get into that routine. It's, you know, for us, for a caddy, Monday is our day, you know. You know, get out there by yourself, study as much as you can, pick up a lot of information on a fresh course.
Yeah.
But, you know, when the golf course, even on a golf course where the guys are familiar and the caddies, you're rocking up there on Tuesday. You know it. You know the keys. They've got great yardage books now for us on tour. And, you know, the USGA have been quite strict on this one this week because of the, you know, the green regulation.
Oh, yeah, green ready books,
You know, the whole changes they've made the last 18 months where they've taken out all the information out of green, you know, green reading, which is great. They're getting back to basics, which it should be. And it's basically, you know, you just got to get in there and write as much information of your own stuff. They do allow us to roll the balls around the green. And, you know, if we want to, you know, do our own checking, we're physically allowed to do that, but we cannot. The rules of golf now, we're not allowed to copy stuff from last year's AT&T Championship, or if you're doing the men's tour or whatever on this golf course here at Pebble Beach. You know, we're not allowed to use that because that's a PGA Tour event. They will allow you if it was a USGA event. So that's our you know, fine line they've come down to it, you know. So, yeah.
These are the bylaws you don't hear anything about on the other podcast, right?
It's a good little
fascinating. Peek. Are you in the minority or the majority about seeing the back of Ben Green reading books being a good thing, Dean, amongst your peers?
Yeah, I've seen the back of them. Yeah, I'd love to see him go. It's
but what great. About everybody
because,
else?
I thought it looked stupid. What was his name? Webb Simpson. And I think that was initially actually a turning point at the US Open that Webb Simpson had won in San Francisco. I think it was the Olympic course.
Yeah, Olympic Club in 2012, yeah.
Yeah, and his caddy pulled out this A4 sheet on the 18th green, and apparently one of the USGA guys looked down on what is that, you know? And that's when it started, you know, because the A4 sheet it's an oversize of the green. The full sheet has the oversize of the green, and where Webb was located, where it's all scaled in and graphed, and it could tell you where within 5 centimeters where Webb Simpson's golf ball was sitting. And all he's got to tell Webb Simpson is the fact that, okay, it's going to go left to right and it's slightly downhill.
Not the first time Webb Simpson's ruined something for everybody.
he helped bring in the anchor ban. With that win too?
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Uh-huh. What I was actually asking, Dean, is are you in the majority or the minority amongst caddies and players about seeing the back of the green reading books being a good thing? Do most people agree with you or are you
most people agree with me, yeah. Excellent. I think most of them do, yeah.
Good to hear.
Because, you know, we're all about protecting the basics of the game. And, you know, I'm in the majority, yeah. Yeah, a lot of the caddies agree. They love it. And it actually brings us really back into it.
Yeah.
You know, it brings in the skill of a good caddy who can actually read greens themselves and actually do the job, and it makes the caddy be a difference, which it should be. A good caddy should provide a difference, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about caddies doing
and
the
it,
whole?
It makes our profession more of a profession, and what was happening and the trend basically on the PGA Tour as well is, the players are actually, they got so lazy that they had all this information in front of them that they're kind of like, oh, I'll just bring my brother out and caddy.
Yeah.
It's no big deal, you know, and give me that sheet of paper. That's great. Let's run with that.
Yeah.
And so they were there just for a buddy, you know, they just needed a buddy for support. But now gotten rid of everything, it's now made our job back into the professional ranks it was 20 years ago, you know.
Back in business.
15 years ago.
What were you going to say, Luke? What caddies were you going to slur?
What's this thing called?
Aimpoint.
Aimpoint. What about caddies doing Aimpoint?
Well, I don't like Aimpoint really at all.
Well, I don't like Aimpoint at all, but caddies doing it is a bit too far, I think.
Yeah.
To me, I don't do it. It's overkill. You can do that very, very quickly too, by the way. I just find it funny when I see a lot of caddies up there, you know, really taking their time and, you know, get the feet side to side, blah, 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 the fingers are out. And it's like, hang on, just, you can do it with your feet. And, you know, you can actually feel it with your feet, you know, if you do it enough. There's no need to get the fingers out and all this stuff, you know, it's just like overkill.
I think a number of players didn't want to learn it themselves, so made their caddies learn aim point, and then we'd just have them step in and do that part, and then sort of give them the line of it.
My whole thing, that happened a lot.
Yeah,
you can feel the line with your feet, but in your putting position, like I don't know why you have to straddle the line for aim point.
Well, because you're looking towards the hole, and so you're trying to get.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you're trying to get left to right, right to left.
Yeah.
You can feel that just with your feet.
Oh, good putters like you can, but there's humans out there.
Putters like you who point at people when they're missing putts can.
Exactly right. What's the week entail for you, Dan? We imagine for the players it's a whole bunch of stuff, including media. You wouldn't get a lot of media stuff, and it's been very kind of you to take some time to do this. But what's the routine like for the caddies? What are you looking out for? I imagine there's an element of seeing bits and pieces that the players might not be able to pick up on because they've got some other distraction. What's the caddies' role at this stage of the week, 2 days before we get underway?
Yeah, get to know the golf course as much as possible, and that's where that day that you have by yourself, where you're finding out so much detail on the course, and just transferring that to the player. You're out there having a practice round. You just want to reconfirm what you checked by yourself. You're relating that. You relay that to the player. Our job right now is probably over now, but. All we're doing right now is, okay, we're off to the range, you know, to practice. We're off to go and do 9 holes. We're off to do whatever, you know. So our jobs are basically right now, our job is kind of finished because we did it a couple of days ago. Yeah. And we're just basically going through the motions and making sure, you know, the player's properly serviced, you know, make sure we're there. She wants you to, you know, get up to the driving range, get to here, get to there, you know, just be support for the next 2 days, waiting for the gun to go off.
Because it's almost the worst time, isn't it, the anticipation and the waiting. It's huge events about to get underway, and you can't get started. You've got all this nervous energy and you can't
correct.
Get started.
Correct. And, it stresses back to what we talked about before, turning up to a golf tournament too early, you know, and you're kind of like, oh, God, you know, I'm waiting for this thing to start now, you know.
You're spent.
And it makes it a long week, yeah.
Come Thursday, how does that change? Once the first tee shot's been hit, I imagine it's a whole new, whole different ball game. Would I be right about that?
Yeah. You're into the, you know, it basically starts when you get to the golf course in the morning, and it's usual routine 2.5 hours before on the women's tour. On the men's tour, maybe 1.5. Mm-hmm. The ladies tour, the women practice way a lot more than the men at the event. The men do it away from the tournament, and they bring a game to a tournament. The women want to, you know, they're just making sure. They're just, you know, they're doing a lot more practice than what the men do. I did 15 years on the men's tour, and, you know, it was sometimes some guys would be like, oh, I'll see you an hour before, you know, before our tea time. But I know with the women, especially Korean women, they love to work hard. And there was one stage there, I had to turn up 3 hours before the tea time, even if it was like 7:20. I had to be at the course at 4:30.
Wow.
You know, so.
You made 15 years on the men's tour sound like a sentence there, didn't I? I did 15 years. I did 15 years at Boggo Road before I came here. That's what I sort of.
This, for some players, it was.
Yeah, very much so.
This week, Dean, that different feeling. Ingy's group is pretty special for the first two rounds. You're playing with Annika and Michelle Wee West.
Wow.
Do those moments stand out to you? Does that feel different to you when that kind of grouping happens, or is it just another day?
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, I've got to be totally honest. The first time in 630-odd tournaments that I've done that they've actually had two players in the same group that aren't playing the tour any longer.
Yeah.
I mean, Michelle's retired and Annika's retired. Usually when you've got retired players like that or past champions or whatever, they'll stick them in groups just as a one and have two tour players playing against each other, which is great, you know. Nobody's expecting Annika to win. Nobody's expecting, I'll be surprised if Michelle won because she's hardly played. And we kind of got, I'll be honest with you, mate, it was very despondent when I looked at the draw this morning. I was very frustrated because the USGA were not considering Ingy's situation. She's a major champion from last year. Mm-hmm. She's 11 or 12 in the world. And she's playing against, she's in the same group as Michelle Wee, who hasn't played a tournament for 6 months, 7 months. And Annika hasn't, you know, she teed it up last week. But, you know, it's the US Open, you know, it's okay to have these past champions in the tournament, but two in one group is, I think the grouping was horrible.
And it affects the flow of your player, right? I mean, if there's other players that are struggling and everything like that, it's hard to get that momentum in a group going that people probably don't pick up.
You can't get it because it's two of them there and, you know, who are we playing against? You know, what, you know, and, you know, the, one of them might even beat us tomorrow. Who knows? I got in on Thursday, but, you know, we've obviously had a bad day or done something, but you certainly lose that edge when there's no player in the group that's there that you're regularly up against each week. And I'm really surprised what they did. I mean, I thought it was a shocking move.
A lot of the caddies
came up to me today and said, we can't believe your draw. We cannot believe your group, you know. And it's real. I know the reason why, and it's really sad in the sense that it's basically I kind of feel like it's Golf Channel trying to, you know, they're only having a limited amount of cameras out there.
Of course. Yeah.
And, and that's the only reason, you know, because otherwise you wouldn't do that to another player on a tour.
Yeah.
A girl that's ranked 11 or 12 in the world, and she's playing a major championship with the richest tournament in the world. And they've thrown, you know, just a couple of retirees in the same group.
And it'll be a circus too, Dean. Those two names, Michelle Wee-West and Annika Sorenstam, there'll be a circus around that group. No matter how they play, if they're shooting 80, there'll still be a circus. And it just changes that whole rhythm, as you were talking about earlier, of what week-to-week routine is like on the golf course. That's certainly an odd decision.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the answer to your question, but it was very frustrating seeing the draw to that. And I was so tempted to go to the USGA and just say, what the – who's doing the draw? I mean – did you consider thinking about Inchi at all or not? You know, and they've just thrown it in there thinking this is great. This will be great for television, blah, blah, blah. And basically I start thinking, I thought to myself, hang on, how many TV cameras have they got out there? Mm. They're just trying to save their cameras.
Trying to save cameras at the time,
Yeah, indeed. It's quite sad, isn't it? In some ways, not to excuse this one, it's a tough call. I remember when Tiger Woods first came to Australia, there was, within the PGA Tour offices, like, who do you pair with him?
Yeah.
Who can deal with that? They actually went and asked players. I think they had Brett Ogle and Robert Allenby in the end they might have gone to and said, look, you know, you're happy enough. And those two were. But it's you're right. It can be quite unfair to stick the circus around players. And who would you put them with? If you're going to put two of them in the same group, who do you put them with? I'm not sure I would have picked a high-profile player.
No. Well, it does negatively affect NG without question, which is unfair.
But in some ways, it's going to fire the big man up here, and I reckon it might actually work in her favour.
That's fair. We got Dean fired up, right. But I don't know if NG's the kind to come out fired up. But
you've had your history with the USGA too. You didn't say you didn't you? Weren't you in the playoff when they called? They were going to call it. You didn't want to call it because it was dark, and you had didn't you have a run in with one of the officials on the back of the tee?
Saw Young Roo, 2011.
Yeah,
we're in. We had. It was a horrible tournament. We're at the Colorado, and you could pretty much set your watch on a 4 o'clock and 4 o'clock afternoon thunderstorm. And I was really surprised we had the US Open at that golf course, actually. Anyway, we're on the 16th tee. We the actual tournament, and it was getting dark. And I said to Soyoung, I said, "Can you see the flag at all down there?" And she goes, "No, I can't." I said, "Well, we're stopping play." So every group had a rules official with us. So, and I just turned to the guy and said, "We're done." Anyway, he just turned around and said, no, you can't, because the group behind, Morgan Pressel and Paula Creamer, well, they asked to stop play, but, you know, they're playing. And I said, when was that? And he said, well, about 5 minutes ago. And I said, well, it's 5 minutes darker right now. Yeah. And we could not see, not only the green, the pin, we couldn't even see hardly see the green, you know. Anyway, he's turned around and he says, if you don't, we're going to have to disqualify you. And I said, what? Excuse me, you know. And I said, mate, please get on the radio and just, call it in. Anyway, they radioed back and straight away the guy said, yeah, we're going to call it soon. And I said, we're calling it now because we're not hitting our tee shot. And because there was a bunch of trees behind the green and made it so dark, you know. And it was on the 16th hole at Broadmoor. And so anyway, in the end, he's turned around, he goes, oh, my apologies. You know, and there was a couple of swear words going back and forth from me, of course. She was right in the heat of the moment. We're only one shot behind.
Well, if you're wondering who did the draw for the first round of this year's US Women's Open, just look up the roster for volunteers and the USGA staff and who was doing the 16th hole at the Broadmoor in 2011 on Sunday. And I think you'll have found your answer. Let's move on from something. Let's talk about the golf course. Logue, you filled us in a lot on the golf course. What would you like to know from Dean, who's now walked it about 1,000 times in the last 5 or 6 days, from what you were reading to what they might face this week? There could be some differences, I'd imagine.
Yeah, well, I think one of the fascinating things about Pebble Beach is that we see it every year, and the AT&T in the men's tour should be an amazing tournament, but somehow it just doesn't pop. Mm. And I don't know if it's the lack of interesting camera angles or the incredibly slow celebrities.
They focus on celebrities. It's not about the golf. It's
something about that coverage just is completely flat. But it's also something to do with the course setup, I think. They managed to elevate Pebble Beach for when the men's majors are there. I'm interested to know what it's like, what the setup's like this week.
AT&T's played in January, February. And actually, I was talking to Grant Waite yesterday. Grant's out here. Yeah, coaching now, and he used to be a PGA Tour player and fantastic player. And Grant actually had some good finishes at the AT&T. He finished about fourth or fifth a couple of times. And anyway, we're talking about it walking around yesterday. And anyway, he said it's such a difference around here because they play the AT&T in February, and usually it's excuse the French, but it's pouring. It's raining. And
is that French?
And anyway, a lot of people have got the rainwear on, and it's just a long course.
Sorry, we're having some fun at your expense, Dan. that wasn't actually French that you used there in the end, mate. But I think you were going to suggest that it was pissing down. But we'll move on from there.
There you go. I couldn't find the word. Yeah. But anyway, he mentioned yesterday how different the course plays, and it's very flat during January, February. The grass, and it's raining, and it's thick rough, and it's just like it's very difficult. It's sloppy course. This time of year, much greener, a bit of run on the fairways, and he says it's chalk and cheese. Totally different golf course. And this week, it's been soft. Last Saturday, Sunday over the weekend, but they've stopped watering. So I've noticed a difference now, especially after Tuesday, after 2 days now, Monday, Tuesday, that come Thursday, it's going to be certainly a lot firmer. And there's no rain predicted for 4 days, which is great. Nothing tomorrow, which is good. So I know for a fact that the USGA have stopped watering it. And there's going to be that big first bounce you probably saw in the old, back in the old US Opens or whatever. The greens are definitely firmed up, and the fairway is going to have a little bit of run on them. Yeah,
perhaps no rain, Dean. But is there the marine layer going to be a factor?
That's all we want to know. Marine layer.
I knew this was all about the marine layer. This interview, I know, but.
And what? So, what uniform do the caddies wear? Are you able to prepare yourself with multiple layers of clothing?
Oh no!
Rain.
You've walked into an ad here, Dean.
The temperature can change quite a bit during the day, but if you're...
What would you do about that, Logue, if the temperature changed a bit during the day?
Well, if you dress yourself from the sponsor of this podcast, Angus and Grace Go Golfing, you've got a variety of clothes you can choose from there. Jimmy, I thought I saw you on social media in one of Angus and Grace Go Golfing's new mock necks.
Yeah, I have indeed entered into my model era and the new Merino mock necks, which are made with ZQ... Merino wool, I believe, is the
indeed the most. It's the world's leading ethical wool brand,
and very comfortable, very warm, but light would be perfect in a marine layer. I would suggest
merino layer,
and on theme, you were wearing the navy colour. Navy colour one.
There's more of my modelling to come, showing off some new pants colours from Angus and Grace Go Golfing, as well as the mock necks.
I've got a question about Angus Grace Go Golfing. Are you guys paying him? Because if he's paying you, something's gone horribly wrong. This is the worst possible ad reading we've ever heard. Where do you find all this stuff
If you want to judge our ad reading, you can go to Angus and Grace Go Golfing on Instagram and angusandgracegogolfing.com.
Or stop in at the shop at 39 William Street, Paddington, or the Paddington Collective, as you like to call it.
There you go.
I do not like to call it. I just noted that that's what it's going to be called. So take it easy. What will be in the bag in terms of weather then, Dean? Do you take the risk and leave the rain gear out and all that sort of stuff when you go? If you get caught in a rainstorm out there on Friday afternoon, you're not going to be popular if there's no rain gear in the bag, are you?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But it seems like they've got a lot of technology now, right? And it's great because they can predict if there's going to be the storm, but then, whatever. It's just so much more technical now. They've got a guy on site that's there for the whole 4 days, studying the weather by every 20 minutes, and we pretty much know what's going to hit us before, or what's coming to us before we tee off. So
I hope you don't get.
But, well, I'm going to be. I'll just have a jacket in there. I'll be wearing the shorts around. Majority of the caddies will just have a jacket in there, mate, not to make the bag too heavy, just in case that that marine layer comes flying in. And we've got to pull the jacket out and it just dropped 15 degrees, you know.
We are joking about it, but it is quite an unbelievable thing when it does happen.
It's staggering. It's fog.
And it's fog, yeah.
It's just fog that rolls.
It's like a lot of fog in Sydney.
Oh, yeah, this morning. I saw it this morning.
It's like a barranca is just like a creek bed, whatever. But when the marine layer does roll in and you just can't see anything, I saw some photos from Grace Kim was out practicing yesterday. And it just came in and you couldn't see anything.
The world disappears.
Just couldn't see the greens, couldn't see anything. I was like, okay, well, I guess we're done here.
It was really weird during our practice round. I was walking around with Michelle Wee and Ingie wasn't in the group. She was, you know, she was off doing something. I thought I'd go and walk a few holes and I thought I'd walk with Michelle's group. And anyway, we were just walking and we walked up to one of the tees and within 5 minutes, it just came rolling in at 5:30 in the afternoon. And we were kind of like, we couldn't see 20 yards ahead of us. Mm. And by 7:30, probably at 7 p.m., I mean, an hour and a half later, whole golf course was clear again.
Clear as a bell.
Yeah.
You know, the sun was out and it's bizarre. It was really weird.
Crazy. Quite disconcerting, isn't it? But the world just disappears and then an hour later it reappears again. Let's get some insight into the course setup, Dean. There'll be a lot of chatter this week about the rough and how thick it is and what it's going to take, what elements of the game will be particularly tested. It feels like this is one where all elements of the game, including emotional control, are going to be tested this week. What's your take on how they've set the course up to this point, given that they might change it a little bit between now and Thursday?
I think it's great. They got a great setup this week. It's not sand iron out of, or, you know, wedge out of the rough or anything like that. You can get an 8-iron at it and advance it maybe 120, get it down there 130 yards. So it's fair. It's the fairways that, you know, I was really surprised how they've set it up a little wide, actually, in some holes. I thought they could have tightened them up, but you'll find that once the girls are in the rough, they're in it. Around the green the greens are so small here at Pebble that around the greens it's very, very thick. It's just thick and juicy. And the grass that surrounds the bunkers, I'm not a big fan of it. It's very American kind of thing to have grass floating around these bunkers. They call them eyelashes or whatever the Pebble Beach want to be renowned for, but I think it's ridiculous because you can play a better iron shot than your playing partner who just skanks it into the bunker, and you've hit an iron shot straight at your flag and you've come up 2 yards short and you're in this mess that you know you're going to be making bogey, and they get up and down out of the bunker and make par. So I'm not a big fan of it, but it's just this thick, massive, juicy grass that's around these bunkers. You'll see it on TV in a couple of days, but it's just not I'm not a big fan of it, but it's what they've got here at Pebble, you know.
Well, it keeps the ball out of the bunkers.
I don't understand
that.
Yeah.
And you're going to get these ridiculous stances. You can't actually stand to hit the shot, so you've got to take it unplayable, you know. I watched yesterday, Angie come up with a little bunker shot. We were just hitting some balls out of a bunker, and she hit a couple, and a couple didn't carry that 1 yard further where it got on the green, and all of a sudden it just went disappeared, gone. What happened? You know, it's just going to look stupid, you know. And for what reasons, I've got no idea. It's just it's against everything I grew up or learned about golf.
Yeah, indeed. So
I just wish the USGA had probably realized this and made it a little bit lighter. It's the thickest I've ever seen around these bunkers. But I'm kind of curious to look back on old video footage of 82 or 92 US Open what it looked like. But it's very, very thick.
Well, you've been there for long enough, Dean. Why haven't you looked that up yet? You've been there for long enough. Why haven't you looked that up?
Yeah.
Hey, what have you been doing? Why are they walking around the golf course? Kari Webb once told me that the thing that separates the best players at this sort of level is firmness in terms of the way the golf course plays. When you get it firm, that's when the better players really can shine. Tiny greens that are firm with really thick, juicy rough around them doesn't sound like maybe necessarily that is so much the case. Is it the case this week that you understand you are going to make bogeys and doubles simply because of the nature of the golf course setup, and you've got to be prepared to deal with that, whether you've hit good shots or not?
And that's where your patience comes into it. You know, you want to pull your hair out sometimes, but they're not firm yet, but I can see these greens getting firm by Saturday, Sunday, definitely. And, that's the thing they've got to start looking at. They're actually making an adjustment to number 9. I got a message last night from the USGA saying that they're going to be making an adjustment to number 9 because quite a lengthy hole. But they've realized that the second shot coming into the green for the women no spin. It's going to be a high, you know, hybrid club or whatever. But the green's not deep enough to maintain a ball that lands a yard on, and you know, it's going to release out to the back. So they've got some they've come up with some really good common sense and decided to let us know that they're more inclined to use the forward tee, okay. Which is about 60 yards forward, which means now the girls are going to be coming in with a line in that green, and it's a tough driving hole anyway. And so there's little adjustments there. They're on top of it. They're aware of it. So hopefully there'll be some good decisions made before the.
I love the look of that ninth hole, Dean. Does Ingy practice like hitting like a draw into that fairway to hold it, or like what sort of does she shape exactly. to fit the fairway?
You try and work it left to right, but the breeze comes in from right to left so much it keeps it straight, but. And the ball bounces to the right towards the beach. But the big difference is when they move the tee up, it becomes the ball finishes in this narrow area where you're quite close to the beach. So it becomes a totally different hole, and it's downhill, and it's, you know, number eight's going to be a killer. It's a blind tee shot, and that's the one that's going to be, if the fairway's firm, to not go send your ball over the cliff.
Yeah.
There's going to be a good setup this week. I don't think they're going to be making it, you know, ridiculous, but I'm really happy in the fact that they're on top of things, like getting that message last night and making it a decision 2 days before the tournament's even started. So and they're letting us know. It's not like, you know, we're turning up Thursday morning and going, hey, guess what, the tee's moved up 80 yards, you know. and you kind of, yeah.
Well, not yet.
They're letting us know.
You don't know what they're going to do on some of the other holes. You might step to the 10th and go, hang on a minute, this tee's 80 yards further forward than we expected. The one thing you want to watch on the 8th is
Mike Davis didn't do that years ago. Jim Furyk. Jim Furyk lost that actual US Open we're talking about, the Webb Simpson one. Mike Davis pulled a swifty on him on the Sunday and moved up a tee on this par 5 that Jim Furyk tried to hook a 5-wood around the corner and he couldn't, you know, so it was kind of a bad move. But they didn't inform the players at all, and nobody practiced off that tee all week. So, but they're getting better. They're getting better at it. They're informing us. They realize it causes slow play if they don't inform us, you know. So,
What are the holes to look out for this week? Where's it going to be won and lost? You mentioned the 8th and the 9th. The 8th in particular, you can lose a player at the 8th, can't you? We saw Jordan Spieth nearly went over the edge there a year or two ago, but. Where are the holes that it's going to be won and lost?
Especially that marine layer.
Yeah, that's it. You won't even know that there's a cliff there. You'll just walk straight off. Hang on a minute. What happened there?
Were we a threesome before? I think that's right. Three of us teed off. Anyway. There's 18. It's, you know, the men made 8, always made 18 look relatively easy. But if you think of it from a women's perspective, they're only hitting the ball 250 to 260 yards, and you won't be able to get past that tree that's down the 18th fairway. Mm-hmm. That tree is from the signpost. It's set at around 270 yards, 265 yards. So meters, 235 meters.
Didn't Steve Williams almost run out of balls there one year?
Yeah, he did work for Tiger. Yeah.
Had one ball left.
Yep.
You won't make that mistake, will you?
I'll make sure there's a couple of sleeves in my.
It's called the Williams room. You leave a sleeve leaning against the hotel room door so that you can't get out without hitting it.
Yeah, that's right.
So that you know. It'll be a three-shot hole, I would imagine, for the most of the field this week, 18.
Three-shot, it definitely will be. But they do have the luxury of moving the tee around, so they'll be able to put it 50 forward. If around about 50 forward, the big hitters will have a crack at it. And, they'll have to move the tee forward, but playing it back to where, you know, the old Jack Tom Watson photo was taken, you know, where they sat on the fence there back at that tee, it's a three-shotter for the girls,
What sort of player are we looking at, Dan? Obviously, you'd be confident, and rightfully so, Ingy's one of the best players in the world, ranked 11th or 12th, as you said. Major experience, I think, won't hurt this week. But what sort of player? Does this favour any particular type of player? The LPGA seems more democratic generally than the PGA Tour. You just hit at miles and, you know, that's how it works. You've got a much bigger spread of game styles, it feels like, on the LPGA. Is any of them going to be favoured this week, do you think, or...?
I tell you what, if anybody can pick the winner this week, good luck. I mean, you've got a bunch of players that are in such good form. It's a second shot course. It's the greens are so small. So, you know, you just got to find a player. It doesn't have to be, a long hitter will not, doesn't have a massive advantage around this course at all. A player that controls a tee shot and being able to hit from the fairways and spin the ball, keep it on the green, that's the player you should be looking at. And you can't go past, you know, ruining Yin. You know, she's in great form at the moment, won the KPMG the other week, and she is a solid, solid player. We haven't seen anything of this girl yet. She is going to be really, really good. She's got such a great attitude, strong-minded for a 20-year-old or whatever. She's 21. And so there's that sort of player that's an iron player. It's a steady. I don't know why, but I'm walking around this week thinking there's an Asian's going to win this, either from Japan or Korea or whatever, because I kind of see the lies. The fairway lies and stuff, very similar to Asia, where the hilly golf courses, the ups and downs, and of course, there's a lot of holes here that are quite flat, but I just find the couple of crucial line shots that need that side hill, downhill stuff, the Asians are quite used to it. And if you can see a player, an Asian player that's probably a good driver of the ball and a wonderful line player, there's your player right there.
Just describing your own boss there. That's just Dean, conveniently.
And without making any names up.
I mean, it almost, Inge's obviously won three majors, but she's almost underrated as a player. Oh,
yeah, very much.
I mean, she's played 41 majors and finished in the top 25, nearly half.
Wow.
She's had 42 top 10s on the LPGA Tour and come second 12 times.
She's got a good caddy.
Well, what are you saying? That's, yeah, absolutely. We agree with that. But
I've only been there for about 30 tournaments. So.
But how impressive is she to watch up close, Dean, with particularly ball striking? I think as she hits it gun barrel straight, really. But how impressive is it all over?
Yeah, when she's off, she's not majorly off. You know, it's not like, you know, she's a very steady player. She doesn't go at the ball really, really hard, but. She uses her width, so that's where her distance comes from. She's not really long off. She's probably just above average in the driving distance stuff. It's just this noise that the ball makes when she starts clicking it, you know, and it's like, oh, wow, there's a kind of a short thud, you know, just a crisp iron shot that she always hits, and pretty consistent, you know, and there's only one other player that I've kind of heard a lot from was G.A. Shin, and actually G.A. is playing this week too, so there's another player that could pop her head up. But yeah, with Inge, she's just hits this iron shot that's got such good noise to it, you know, just like, oh wow, you know, that sounded so good, you know, and the flight's really good, and she controls the flight really well. The big thing that Inge does have, and every player knows out here, is that she's got a great golfing mind. Mm-hmm. She really handles. You know, some weeks when she's just really struggling to make the cut, she always gets through it. She's constantly testing herself all the time, and she doesn't get, and she's always a sweetheart. So, you know, she maintains emotion, everything, you know. She's great golfing mind, very deep thinker. You know, numbers are going through her mind all the time. Sometimes she overdoes it. But generally speaking, she's just got a good mind, strong mind. She struggles sometimes, and if you notice with the record, she's only won. Well, she's won four times, but three of them have been majors.
That's right. You'd take
she struggles
that.
On a. Yeah, she she struggles on a regular tour event, and you know when you get a regular tour event, she's normally, you know, she's into it, but she's not into it like a major. You know, she just she really turns the volume up on it.
She's got the Kepkas. She's got the Kepkas going.
Yeah, that's right.
Can't find out where you're at.
I only care about the big one.
Yeah, that's exactly that, what you're talking about there, though, Dean, that mental strength and all those kinds of things, goes up a level these weeks, doesn't it? Not only are the golf courses harder, everything about the scrutiny, the pressure, that everything is amped up a little bit, isn't it? And those things become almost more important than the golf swing in some ways.
Oh, definitely. And it's Thursday, Friday is always hard at a major. You know, players trying to find the golf course and search their position, or they're looking at, you know, sneaking there and, you know, having a quick look at the scoreboard and where am I at? And, and the build up and, you know, it's difficult. Yeah. It's really, really tough. And, It definitely the volume, you know, gets turned up. I've been watching the girls this week. Some of the girls I've hardly seen on the driving range, you know, quite a few weeks, and all of a sudden they're out there. You know, it's like they put in the extra hours, you know.
If you ever see Laura Davies on the driving range, you know you've got a tough week ahead.
That's not, yeah, exactly.
Not her place. Jimmy, Dean mentioned Runong Yin then, who won the PGA at Baldwinsville the other week. All changes for her this week, doesn't it? She was a virtual, not an unknown amongst the players, but virtual unknown to the wider public before she won that. That changes, and she'll never have that luxury again. We're going to talk about Rose Zhang shortly and what she's going through. Similar thing for Yin, don't you think? And I think most players who've won a major find this. The world changes. They don't change, but the world changes around them.
Absolutely. I mean, you instantly expected probably to do a press conference most times, or at least some sort of interview. Someone's going to want you for something. You got pulls on your time, and suddenly what you say carries far more weight.
You get smart all of a sudden when you're in a major.
That's, Jeff Ogilvie's spoken about it before, that you know he's still the same guy as he was before he won the US Open and after, but suddenly everyone cared what he said. And some people I think that has an effect on. They try to be more thoughtful and careful, or even say more interesting things. Jason Day strikes me as one of those, that Jason realized that suddenly when he said something, it got more attention. So he made an effort to say things that were more interesting or more had more depth. It didn't always work that way, but he tried. Adam Scott's realized that. Jeff's realized that. I think for the Australian women, Hannah and Minji are realizing that. Minji we had on a call last week, and Minji's probably a cautious talker.
Yeah.
And part of that is now her status in the game. And Ronnie Yin's going to find that pretty quickly too. And particularly this case where it's 2 weeks, after. And now you've got to talk about your place in the game. And for a player like her, as the second Chinese woman to win a major, it's huge.
They're becoming home as well as the we're not seeing.
Correct. I mean, that's the women's game, I think, has that struggle more than the men's, because so many of the players come from overseas and these markets we can't pretend to understand. I mean, covering the women's amateur Asia Pacific in Thailand last year, and Saki Barber, who won the US women's amateur, she teed it up. She played pretty badly until the last round. Every day there was 15 Japanese journos surrounding her that did nothing else all week but talk to Saki about how she was playing. That's insane pressure for someone who's, I think, 19 years of age, you know. NG spoke about it in that Golf Channel video that I wrote something about a couple of weeks ago, about the anxiety and things that come with this pressure, that these are people who are just good at a game and go, I'm going to do this for a living. And Rose Zhang's about to have it tenfold. I mean, I spoke to Gabby Ruffles earlier in the week, and we spoke about on Playing from the Tips as well. She won the US Amateur. She lost in the final to Rose, just. And I said to her, do you kind of really like where you sit compared to where she sits, even though you're playing Epson, she's playing LPGA, she's won? She goes, absolutely. I wouldn't want that. That's so much. And there's already pressure on these players, you know, to make money and succeed.
For others, not for themselves.
Absolutely. And I think the Rose Zhang machine is going to be something. And it's an amazing sort of a week where Rose is going to be one of the main focuses this week, as Michelle Wee, who was the last player to really go through it, gives it away for good. Yeah. And the damage it did to Michelle Wee's golf game, and some of it self-inflicted, some of it inflicted by other people who thought they had their best interests at heart, it's a fascinating thing to watch.
Well, the Rose Zhang machine has already started, I can tell you now. It's the Golf Channel just pumping it right now, and Rose had to do, I think she had to do two interviews today, and one in the morning and the afternoon, and time restraints. You know, she's, you know, busy girl now. You know, her life's been changed, and this is where I think Yin, it's a godsend for Yin, because Rose is going to be getting all the attention, and Yin's just going to be gliding through, like a bit like, I guess, Johnny Miller, and all of a sudden this guy called Tom Watson popped up, you know, back in the old days. And, when I look at Yin, I kind of see the same package as what Tom Watson was, you know, like 40 years ago and 30 years ago, and when watching him, because he was kind of a great player. He got on with the job, and I just see Yin cleaning up in these events, with Rose having to be wearing the brunt of the whole media attention.
There'll be a lot of people listening, Dean, who'll think, well, there might not be a lot of people listening.
There's dozens of people listening.
That's right. For anybody who is listening, Mum, if you're listening, listen to this bit in particular. You've set it up close. A lot of the general public think, oh, you've just got to do a couple of interviews. What's so difficult about that? Try and give us a sense of the time or of the pressures that are placed on these players once they go into that elite circle where the media want their time. Because it's not just media, it's sponsors, it's fans, it's everybody.
It's endless. A weekend of event, that Monday they used to have off. Now, the LPGA wants you to come in Monday afternoon or whatever and do something. Could you do this? Could you do this? Oh, by the way, there's a junior clinic we got on this week. They'll tell the player the week before, and the manager gets all this, and they try and work around it. And so all of a sudden, her Monday's out now, and Tuesday becomes busier now. It's not just a nine-hole glide around and practice round with your friends out there, or you know, and then have a little bit of a bet for nine holes and walk off the course, and then go and have some lunch and go and do some practice, and then go back to the hotel. It's all changes, you know, because the LPGA staff are coming up to the player, you know, oh, by the way, could you come and do this for us? You know, come, by the way, can you come and do that for us? And so that's just the tournament week. When you get your sponsorship money, obviously the tone of that gets turned up because you're winning. Now your sponsors, when you during the weeks that you had off, going back to Korea, for example, you know, the trip back, the easy peasy trip that you were going to have back in Korea and just chill out with mum and dad and maybe go down to your golf course and hit golf balls. Nah, by the way, you've got four outings to be faced, you know, to go play with your sponsors because, you know, you're really popular now and they want to be seen with you and we want to keep that relationship strong and we want to keep the, you know, so it gets really busy. Life just gets busy, you know, and they're making more money. Yes. But it gets way, way busy off the golf course for them. Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Which all robs from what most of them bloke have probably done for their whole lives is devote the bulk of their time to golf. Mm. Now it's the one thing they don't get to. There's no time to actually give, or not as much time to give to the golf. It can't help. The other thing you've got to learn, I would imagine, Logan, is to say no. Hard for a girl like Rose Zhang, who seems instinctively very nice, to learn how to say no.
Yeah, well, if Michael Block taught us anything with the popularity that he got.
Say no sometimes.
Yeah, say no sometimes.
They need that. They need the great team around them. That's what it is, you know. And what Rose is under Steinberger, isn't she?
Yeah. Yes, he is. Yeah, she is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's had a taste of this stuff.
He's got no problem saying no.
He's pretty good at saying no.
Yeah.
It's his default position, isn't it?
I think that kind of plays into why so many top pros don't enjoy just playing golf anymore. It gets beat out of them because it becomes such a job, and it is their job, sure. But I find myself in the same boat. I don't enjoy going to play golf unless it's, you know, occasional things with Logan and Ewan and other guys. But it becomes your job, and that's all it is, and you can't just go and switch it off. And my job dealing with players, it's, you know, you learn to respect it and you build their relationships, and it must be hard for them. You know, I'm close with a lot of players who, you know, it's my job to ask if they've got time for a chat and everything like that. But I fully respect if they say, oh, can I do it tomorrow? Can we do it later? I'm trying not to do it this week. That's fine. But they've obviously, they go through this thing of, well, I've got to tell someone who I'm actually quite friendly with, or, you know, who I normally message back and forth with. I'm not going to reply to them.
Say no.
But you respect it. I mean, Hannah Green does a really good job of it. I get along really well with Greenie. But when she knows she's got something or she doesn't feel like doing it, she says no. And that's the way it is, you know. But it must be hard, I mean, to have that moment.
Oh.
Phil Mickelson seemed to enjoy it to me last time he did.
They get back to their hotel room and then all of a sudden they've got to work on this Twitter thing or this, you know, this player account or whatever they got on social media. You know, so, you know, it's just endless. Yeah, they just can't go home, go back to the hotel and, oh, great, I can go to that, my favourite restaurant. This is great, you know.
Yeah.
But they get way, way busy, very, very busy.
Without naming names, Dean, but one of the things that can happen in these circumstances is, somewhat understandably, I guess, you get jealousy from other players. A player like Rose, who's none of this is her fault, quote unquote, but other players will be jealous about the attention that she's getting. Have you seen any of that? And what would be your advice to a young player like Rose, who will need a good caddy amongst other things to help deal with some of this sort of stuff? Have you seen much of that? That's the we saw it with Tiger. He eventually.
I'm just seeing the start of it now. You know, like a small example is, you know, Rose is up there on the TV at lunchtime today. We're, you know, a whole heap of people in there in the players' lounge and stuff, and everybody looked up and gone. And I just looked around at about five or six people. I could just see them all rolling their eyes. You know, oh, there's Rose Zhang again. You know, and you know, and then I could hear this whisper of, you know, you, and it was often said, you know, the last couple of days was you would have thought she won the KPMG, you know, by finishing eighth, you know. And so the amount of media attention she got, you would have thought she won it. You know, this is, so many people said that today. And I just,
to be fair,
I worry for her because America really needs a sweep. They need a gun. You know, I felt Paula Creamer had to go through all this. Natalie Gulbis back in the day.
Michelle Wheat, definitely.
Michelle, same, you know, but it was kind of, it affected Paula. I remember it affected Paula a lot. She had a lot of eating habits, and her eating habits changed a lot. And, you know, that was that affected her a lot. She was quite emotional in some stages. And you're talking about a great player who did a lot when she was young, you know, and she was going to be a superstar. And she turned out to be at the end, but, you know, then it was kind of a career that could have been, would have been, might have been, you know. I felt the media really affected Paula.
To be fair, Dean, none of those players you've just mentioned could hit a ball from one of the most iconic par threes in American golf and have the tee land in the pocket.
Stop.
Correct.
So yeah. The hype is real.
There's magic there, isn't there?
We talked about groupings earlier with Inge's group. Rose is playing with Brooke Henderson and Lydia Ko. Mm-hmm. That's different.
Brooke Henderson, my pick for the tournament.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah. The media stuff. Nelly Korda last year when she went through her health things is a great example of how invasive it can be at times. She clearly did not want to discuss what she had been through, but she was not playing golf. And as a journo, you have a job to try. And then once it stopped, you should respect that.
Daniel Kang as well.
Daniel Kang, similar. Yeah. And it kept being pushed. And then, of course, in the world we live in now with conspiracies about this and that, that started to become part of the discussion. And it clearly weighed on Nelly very, very, very heavily throughout the year. And she, in her interviews now, when she does stuff, it's not the same person.
No.
Which is hard to see that sort of be beaten out of somebody.
Not sure if you can survive it without changing. Is it worse for young women, do you reckon, Logue?
Possibly, yeah. You know, there's, yeah. Sorry, you go, Dean.
No, go ahead. I jumped in. I didn't realise you were.
I think there's a trajectory they go in their career where initially it's full of promise and excitement, and they know that they've got this skill set which could be something really significant on the world stage. And I think we saw it with Yin. She probably knew it before anybody that she was a chance in that tournament.
Yeah.
She would have gone into that thinking, I'm hitting the ball really good and I'm a real chance here. And so with no expectation, she's just come out and won it. Now she's expected to play like a major champion and she's probably not going to get the scrutiny right now, which is so interesting because she's the same age as Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've also got a tie.
Swear to God, you wouldn't even know she's here this week. I haven't. You know, I've saw her a couple of times on the driving range. I was watching her this morning. Two or three people around her.
Wow.
You know, she's
putting on an exhibition as well.
That's amazing. Yeah,
she's doing things very, very quietly. And you know, as I said, it's Rose it just this attention that Rose has got at the moment.
It's a very big American element to this, isn't there, Dean? You're right. America, the LPGA, not them necessarily, but America wants an American player to barrack for at the top of the game. And Rose is the most promising thing on the horizon at the moment by some considerable margin. So you kind of get it.
Wore down Lexi Thompson, didn't that expect?
Oh, very much so. I mean, you only look at Lexi. How old is Lexi? 26, 27?
Is she?
She's not 30.
Yeah, she's not 30.
She's been on TV since she was 12.
That's amazing.
That's right, on TV. And, you know, I remember when she came down here at the age of 16 and it was a circus following her around. Yeah. And understand, which is statuesque and amazing hitter of the ball, funky looking golf swing, hitting incredible golf shots and doing amazing stuff. But absolutely, it's not the golf.
28, she
28, yeah.
It's amazing.
It's not the golf that wears these people down.
No.
It's the nonsense that goes on around it that they have no actual control over.
You know? And it's such a lucky dip thing too, to be fair. I mean, I think women's golf, there is a deeper pool of really good players.
Agreed. More democratic than men's golf,
but
I think.
But then who gets picked up as the one that gets thrown forward is not necessarily – I mean, Inge's a great example. She won three major championships. In the men's game, if you'd won three majors, they would not leave you alone at a golf tournament.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas – and you see it in Australia when they come to play the Australian Open from overseas players – G.I. Shin kind of skated through early last year without really being noticed until she was going to win it. So-yeon, I walked around when So-yeon played a practice round with Jeff Ogilvie and no one knew what was going on there. And it's like, I walked around with Clates going, well, this is pretty cool. You don't see this. And watching Jeff kind of give Soyon a little bit of a sandbelt lesson. And it's like, are you aware what's going on here? Like, this is, and then, but
Jennifer Kupcho?
Minji gets a sudden, Minji, everyone wants to go watch Minji. And it's like, okay, that's understandable. But, you know, it, there's all these other players, but it just kind
of. Such a treat to see GI outside of the Japanese LPGA where she normally plays.
Yeah.
It's, it's really special that she comes to Australia.
What a supporter of Australian golf she has.
Yeah.
Far more so than some of our own players, particularly in the men's game. But GI, she has not missed for a very long time, the Australian
Empire. No, she loves the place. She absolutely loves it. And, I think that she's going to make plans to come down in December, I think, in November, December.
Ooh, so. Fantastic.
And what a player she's. You wouldn't count her out necessarily this week either.
No, that's really exciting.
Not at all. She won last. She won 2 weeks ago, $500,000, I think it was, and one of the biggest tournaments on the Japanese tour 2 weeks ago. So she's in great form. She, I spoke to her in December last year and about some ideas, you know, because she just loves Australia. And I came up with her an idea and said, oh, look, I've got some friends of mine who run tournaments. Are you kind of down in the future? Are you interested to have a tournament in Australia with your name on it or something? And she goes, oh, yeah. But to be honest with you, she says, I really want to give next year a really big crack. Ooh, you know, I mean, she says, I'm going to come and play the majors. She's going to play she hasn't played Evian for a few years and now she's going to play. She's going to play the British. She told me that yesterday. So, she really wants to give this year. And you're talking about a girl that's 30, she's 34, 35 now. And, but looks, she is super fit.
Yeah.
And, amazing. I was really surprised. Surprised.
Yeah.
One of those ones that just is so good to watch hit golf balls.
Well, I was just going
to
ask.
It's just so much fun to just post up on the range and watch her hit balls. Just
frozen rope.
Oh, it's just crazy.
I never got sick of it.
No.
Well, I was going to ask you, we had you on the thing about golf, I think, last year, the year before. Tell the story you talked about GA and being on the driving range and what she used to tend to do, and it took you a while to get used to.
Oh, Kingston Heath. Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, this is way back in 2008. And I didn't even know who I was caddying for. A friend of mine who was supposed to caddy for her, he couldn't do it.
The fifth band.
He got in touch with me. He says, you want to do two events in Australia, the Aussie Open at Kingston Heath and the Gold Coast event. And I said, oh, right, yeah, okay. He says, look, it's just a young Korean kid. I said, yeah, that's easy because I'm home. I was in Wagga with mum and a short drive down, no problem at all. Anyway, I saw her on the putting green and I realized, and I looked over and I'm going, oh, I've seen you before. And she goes, yeah, we met at Evian. And I said, oh, yeah. And I looked and I said, you finished third. And she goes, yeah, I finished third at Evian. And, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, my God, it's you. I didn't realize. Oh, this is exciting, you know. But anyway, we're going to have a practice round. I'll see you tomorrow morning. Okay, great. Next morning, turn up, go and have a practice round. We walk over to the range and we're just hitting shots. And I've never seen this girl hit a golf ball, you know, and because the year that she finished third at Evian, we missed the cut. So I was out of there and she was on the other side of the draw. So I didn't even get her to see her hit a golf ball that week. So anyway, I'm on the range at Kingston Heath with her and she's hitting some shots and we go to the wedges, start the wedges and okay, yeah, oh yeah, it looks nice. And you know, she, all of a sudden she gets a 7-iron out and she starts whacking this 7-iron, you know, and after about 3 shots, she hits 150 sign and it's making this clang noise, you know, and then 3 shots after that, clang again. And it was embarrassing because she was hitting this sign. I'd swear to God, out of 20 shots, she would have hit it 6 times. 6 or 7 times, and it was embarrassing because it was making a loud noise. And every time, everyone's looking up. Everyone's looking up at GA, going, yeah, "Can you keep it quiet down there?" You know, so it was really funny. But what an exhibition! You know, she after that practice round, the one practice round I had with her Monday of the Australian Open in 2008, I saw this girl. She is after 18 holes, she's going to be a world beater. This kid, and she, you know, she went on to have a pretty decent career. It was great.
Yeah.
Great
also, one of the nicest people in golf.
Without doubt. Totally unaffected by all of that.
Sweetheart.
Yes. Totally unaffected. So brilliant.
Yeah.
And underrated. Underrated. You go to Korea right now, you ask a general Korean off the street, you know, who's the best player to come out of Korea? They'll always say, you know, Sae Ri Pak, Sae Ri Pak, Sae Ri Pak, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think Sayuri only had, she only had winning 20 odd times or something, or whatever what it was. Or obviously, 27 times, more than 27. She was a Hall of Famer. But GA is up to number 60, whatever it is, 67 or something, 68 wins and 30 in Japan. I know when I caddied for we had a run of for 3 years, we won 26 times.
Wow.
So, you know, so it was just a run. The first year I caddied for her was 10 times. She, and, you know, and actually it was 11, but I wasn't there. She won the big $1 million Trump tournament. And I had a bit of a fight with her father over an issue that Lorena Ochoa's tournament, and he wanted her not to play. And I got really disappointed about it. And I said, well, I'm not going to America to caddy for her in that tournament then. I'm not going to go. Anyway, the funny part was that she won the $1 million and I missed out on getting any sort of commission out. It was a dumb move. Yeah, but anyway, but you know, she won 11 times that year, and I was 10 times I was there with her. But the second year, I think we won 6-7 times, and then the third year, another 8 times or something, whatever it was.
What's that about like? But, why do some players resonate with the public and others don't?
Yeah, I don't know. It's partly, there's a bunch of different factors in that, isn't there? Look in the men's game. I think you find there's more players in the women's game that resonate with the public than there is in the men's game. There's only half a dozen tops on the men's side of things that actually cut through. But in the women's game, you've got, you know, just think of like a Patty Tavitanikat or, you know, just player after player comes along. It's hard to actually hitch your wagon to any player
in the LPGA,
because you know the next one comes along and it's like, wow, here's another superstar.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, another one to keep an eye on this week would be a girl. You've got another girl here that very much under the radar, Minji Park, and she plays on the Korean tour. She's had like 17 wins in the last 3 years, and she's here this week. She, you know, just a straight driver of the ball, great iron player. So, you know, this girl could be a winner as well too. She's actually, Minji won the Australian Amateur Championship, I think, or she was a runner-up. It might have been about 4 or 5 years ago. And but she often talks about Australia and loves it. But she's here this week, and I'm keeping an eye on her. You know, Minji Park, wonderful player.
Can I just say that
very much under the radar.
Take Dean's tips on board. Every now and then I'll message him for a tip on the LPGA, and he's always in the top five with anybody he picks. That noise that GA was making on the sign at Kingston Heath can't have been half as embarrassing as the first time all of us heard the square Nike driver, could it, on a driving range? Do you remember that? Like a baseball bat on a metal rubbish tin lid. It was
empty Pringles can rolling down the street. Oh, if you ever do that, same sound.
Just awful. I was on a driving range at a professional tournament the first time I heard it, and the entire range looked around, what the hell was that?
It was some noise.
Yeah. indeed. What are the pressures for Inge this week? I imagine she would get some press attention, Dean. She won't be in the level of Rozhang and some of the others, but does she cop this everywhere she goes still these days as a three-time major winner? And she must be considered one of the top 10 or 15 chances this week.
Yep. And as I said, we talked about before, she seems to turn the volume up every time there's a major, so I'm hoping that that'll be the case. But the pressure's kind of off her, you know. I don't know why, but it's just, you know, to be honest with you, I was looking at some stats last night, and out of the last, 29 tournaments, we've only finished top 10 three times.
It just happened to be
win, playoff loss, and second at Singapore, you know. So it happened to be the KPMG win, the British Open last year, the playoff lost against Buhai, and we finished second in Singapore. So it seems to be either she's on or she's off, and it's this mental attitude she's got in her head now that, you know, majors are the ones, you know, the majors are the keys, you know. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
If not in G, to wrap it up, who?
I tell you what, one player I'm just keeping an eye on at the moment would be Anna Norquist.
She was my outside. Was
Jimmy's pick.
Yeah, bang.
Jimmy's pick. Yeah.
Finished third, KPMG. She's just on a big turnaround at the moment. You know, there's a lot going on in her private life at the moment, but she's very dogged. She's a very dogged woman, very tough Swede. So I've just noticed her focus has changed so much in the last month. It's just been, it's like she's on a mission. And but I think you've got Yin. There's another one. Celine Boutier is another one to keep an eye on. hits it, you know, if it gets windy, a little low. Yeah. She's got a low flight, ball flight, and strong-minded, very, very strong-minded. Good player, good player, yeah.
Thoughts on Brooke Henderson?
There you go. Yamashita, she's another one. Miyu Yamashita, she's a great player from Japan. So nobody knows about, but again, great ball striker, and her own play is just spot on. Yeah.
You very sensibly left out Angel Yin, who's clearly going to win the tournament because she's who I picked, Dean. So good on you. Glad you haven't done that.
Gabby, I was watching Gabby on the driving range yesterday. She's flushing it.
Ruffles, yeah.
She's right. Ruffles.
Gabby Lopez? No, don't laugh.
Is that not the reaction you were looking for, Lowe?
Gabby Lopez is my outside pick.
Gabby Ruffles is an absolute flusher.
She is a player.
Just flusher.
I was impressed. I haven't seen much of her play, and just the last 2 weeks I've been sort of keeping an eye on her, and this morning I was watching her, and I'll tell you what, it's pretty impressive to watch.
Her physical games caught up with her attitude.
Correct.
She was always a winner upstairs, and the physical games caught up with those incredible mental skills that she brings to
her. She's not been playing golf that long.
No.
That's the thing. No. Like, she's still learning how the game goes, and that's...
I saw her when she was having her second or third lesson with Dennis McDade, and she was topping it. She was only about 12 or 13 at the time, or maybe 14 at the time. She'd only picked up the clubs.
Yeah, she's a mid-teenager.
Yeah, because she'd been playing tennis and didn't like it. And we were at the range then in Melbourne doing something else. She was having a lesson with Dennis McDade, as I realised later. 2 years later, she wins the US Amateur, or 3 years later.
Yeah.
Just crazy. Extraordinary. She couldn't get it airborne in this lesson. It was remarkable.
There is a video of her playing, I think, for the first time.
Yeah.
And she spoke about it the other day, that she's like, I was not that good, but you could just see that there was just this natural athletic ability that transferred into this amazing natural golf swing, and then Dennis helped refine it, and then the sort of dogged mentality that I think comes from mum is,
There's a weird comparison, but she reminds me a little bit swing-wise of Wyndham Clark.
Oh, okay.
The way they both kind of stand square to the ball and have that athletic sort of stance, like they're ready to return serve.
Yep.
I think he's used to play a bit of tennis.
Yeah, so. Wyndham Clark and Jared Felton, still never been seen in the same room at the same time. Dead set twins.
One last pick. I just noticed on my little list here was Minji. Minji's. I watched her this morning and yesterday, and she's absolutely flushing it as well. I was really impressed. She's got really good rhythm with her swing at the moment, and if she can get that flex, you know, the flat stick going, that'll be great. I mean, she'll kill them. Yeah,
she's in that elite class, isn't she, Dean? There's always that handful of players, and she's one of them.
The ball striking's phenomenal. She is in the top 5% on as far as ball striking goes on the LPGA tour, without a doubt. You know, all the girls they just love watching it.
Yeah,
and she flights the ball so high. Her driver carries way above a lot of players out there. It's pretty impressive to watch.
When she's hitting the ball well, Minji has more of her likeness to Minwoo come out with how aggressive an iron player she is.
Yeah.
Doesn't do it with quite the theatrics of Minwoo.
Loves the show, doesn't he?
Is like, he takes some lines and goes at flags that no one else does. Yeah. And it's so impressive to watch that. That's the real fun watching. And then she did that at Pine Needles last year. That was where it was. And people I think who watch golf just go, oh, that's a really good shot. It's hit close. It's like, no, you're not supposed to hit it there.
She's aiming at them.
She's aiming at spots that others are going, oh, nah, not for me.
Yeah. Do you think the small greens level the playing field a little bit for Minji Lee, Dean?
I only caught half the question.
Do you think the small greens level the playing field for her a little bit? Given, you know, that she's not going to be putting from great distance and she's going to hit a lot of greens?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think the big thing with, she's a good iron player, and it's a short irons that she's kind of deadly with. She's very deadly with the short irons, I think, and that'll help her. If she's far enough down the fairway and she's just flicking a short iron in there, she'll really stand out, I think. The other issue she's going to have a problem with is there's a couple of holes here that are big on back to front. And if you're too close to the green, it's very hard to control the spin. Sometimes you'll zip it off the front, on two or three of the holes around here, at Pebble. And, so that's a thing there where, you know, if she can control that, if she can hit a half pitching wedge shot or something in there to control the spin, that'd be great. That'll work out pretty well for her, but, she can actually, she's so long that she can actually be too close to the green. Yeah, but shots out of the rough are really good. So, you know, we'll see.
Nobody will be surprised if Minji Lee defends the US Open, I think. Nobody, including her.
Mm. Hitting it too far, a common problem for Lowe.
Real first world, you're deep in first world problems there. I'm hitting the golf ball too far. It's just really stressing me out.
Steph Bunky, who I caddied for earlier this year at a WPGA event, is in that category here. She hits it so much further than the majority of the field in women's golf in Australia that she just can't hit driver in so many spots. One, because it reaches the trouble, or two, because you're going to be too far down there.
You're too close to the green.
And that pitching over, you know, spots and everything like that, it's like that caddying gig was a real eye-opener to how hard it is for someone like that in that sort of a standout in a category in a smaller tour. It's crazy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, indeed.
And the big thing Mindy's got going for at the moment, she's got an all-Aussie team now. Brad Beach is working for her full-time now, so... Brad was many, many years with MB Park, and he's had a lot of success. So, I think she, it's a bit of the Aussie team. They'll be able to bounce off each other pretty quickly. And I like the just being out with them and watching them together work. They seem to be really, she looks really relaxed out there, really happy, you know, really laid back. And yeah, so I'm really impressed with what Brad's doing actually. He certainly makes the player feel really comfortable out there.
He's one of the very best, isn't he? I mean, Brad Beach, I mean, his resume
works is hard.
Yeah. Yep. And his record with NB is extraordinary, as you know. Always.
Oh, phenomenal.
Always love to hear when she hits a good shot. She says, oh, shot, mate, to NB Park. You wonder what she must have been thinking the first time she heard that. What is this? What does that mean? Shot, mate. Always fantastic. Well, I'm really looking forward to this. I think this is going to be an intriguing and really fascinating US Women's Open to watch.
Oh, right. Going through the list last night, I'm just shaking my head. I'm going, wow, you know, there's like 30 girls could easily win this, you know.
And every chance that there'll be half a dozen of them in with a show with the last nine holes to go, and major championship golf doesn't get any better than that. So that's what we that's what we hope for and look forward to. Mate, we wish you all the very best this week, you and NG. There's no question you could be a part of that, and we hope that you are, because then when you pop up on the TV, I can say to my wife, I know him.
Nice.
It's all about me, Dean. It's all about me. We do wish you the best of luck, mate. It's been extraordinarily generous of you to take some time in what is a very busy week for you, and go well at Pebble this week.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. I'll see you later. Thank you.
Lo, good to have you aboard.
Thanks, Rod. I just want to finally mention Inji Chun's Instagram is a great follow. Inji Chun _Dumbo, 152,000 followers. I'm not seeing any Dean on there, though. I don't know if you want to plug your Instagram, Dean.
I assume I'll be putting that in the show notes, will I?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, for all those out there wondering, put that in the show notes. Jimmy, any Instagram that you want to plug?
I'm all over Angus and Grace's Instagram.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I'll keep coming.
I've already got their link, so that's easy enough for me.
The only thing I'd like to plug as we leave is, can you get a plastic bag and go clean up what's outside?
Yeah. No need. It's all over the bottom of your shoe.
Trailed it into the podcast studio.
Oh, you didn't, did you?
No, I didn't.
Oh, good work. Thank God for that. Well, thanks for that, Jimmy. Good to have you along today now. In light of that, been a joy. And that's it for episode 150 of the Good Good Golf Podcast. We'll be back to it all again next week.